SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e ninen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kako dao. We'll see you again.
This is Monica Passos for CKUT.
Stop putting your TV set on, please.
Doobie-doobie-doo. Bye-bye.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Lover, 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 lover. My lipstick and lover, 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 lover. I like lipstick on my neck. You let me know I'm your number one select. I like lipstick on my neck. Hands around my waist so you know what's coming next. I wanna feel your lips on mine. I just wanna feel a little tongue. We don't have a long time. Ooh, you're talking nasty and I like it. Whisper in my ear, only me you can hear. I seen it from the back and I'm excited. Tell me what you do when we walk up in the room. Yeah, hold me something nasty, we can try.
Try. You don't even know the kind of things, but you tried to tell me all these things. Give me some time, I need peace. I'ma need space some days, and I'm just trying to do my thing, and I'm just trying to get my
all you need. So hard to deceive. And you try to think that I'm the one for you. But don't you see, you're not everything. And I know you're not the one for me. Crazy things are happening. Crazy things are happening. If you need somebody's grace, you fix up somebody's grace. Crazy things are happening. Crazy things are happening. If you need somebody's grace, you fix up somebody's grace. Try, try, try. I try, try. I just want to turn my back tonight, tonight. So I make it seem, make it seem. I just want to turn my back.
I got Milky Way for blood evolution in my vein. I'm gone, I've been far away. I'm illuminated, I'll make a move, start a waves. I've been dreaming about flying for a long time. I had a vision from the phrase they want to co-sign. Artificially intelligent AI. I'm your future, past and present, I'm a fine line. Yeah, I'm a vessel of this illusion. I am not really here.
yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Renee Burwell. She is a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. Her practice, Pandora's Awakening, offers services and educational outreach that help destigmatize mental and sexual health services. She is a skilled facilitator offering trainings and workshops to healthcare and social services professionals on mental health, sexual health, and reproductive justice. She has trained with the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies and believes strongly in the power of plant medicine and other forms of psychedelic medicines in healing current and generational trauma. Renee holds a Bachelor of the Arts in Psychology from Spelman College, a Master of Social Work, and a Master of Public Administration from the University of Southern California, a postgraduate certificate in sex therapy and education from the University of Michigan, and is an AASECT certified as a sex therapist, supervisor, and educator. Renee Burwell, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Well, thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I am doing good. It's been a long week, but trying to pull through.
Of course, we all have those times. I was really fascinated. I came upon your Instagram page, and I was really fascinated by the fact that you work in therapy, but not only therapy, focusing specifically on sexual health and reproductive justice. And I was like, okay, I need to bring you in because I've had people talk about different, like we had a couple of sex coaches come and talk with us. We had somebody talk about reproductive justice as well, but I saw your profile and I was like, well, I need to speak with this person because I think there's a lot of educational stuff. There's a lot of things that we can learn from you. So I guess we'll start with the basics. Like, why did you decide to get into mental health, sexual health, and reproductive justice?
That's always a fun question to ask or answer. Well, I'll say that in general, as a African-American woman who grew up in the South, Southeast of the United States, I know we have listeners from other countries online.
Yeah.
I think reproductive justice and just advocacy is kind of ingrained in us in some ways, or at least within my family. Just knowing that I had certain privileges coming from a mother who was educated. And my father, even though he didn't finish college, he did attend for a little while, and they just kind of ingrained in me, like, you know, you have things that other people don't have when it comes to having access to educational resources. So you need to make sure whatever you do, you hold space for those who don't have it the same way you have it.
Yeah.
'Cause we all have to help each other because we come from backgrounds that don't necessarily, receive the same services as others. Communities or the community at large. So with that being said, before all of this, you know, I was always more the person that whenever someone was going through things, everybody wants to come and talk to me. They're just like, oh, you know, I'm having issues with my boyfriend. I want to know about this. I want to know about that. And I've always just been a big researcher on things, and sex was one of my topics.
Right.
It's just kind of like it's stuff people are doing. In high school, I just was already helping people whenever they had an unplanned pregnancy, get resources. And that kind of was like part of my start. And then when I went to Spelman, I ended up, and it's interesting because I started off as an industrial engineering student.
Okay.
And math major. And I was going to do a dual degree program with Georgia Tech. And that was my focal point. And I also, I was trying to get through school and make sure it was paid for. So I was also in the Navy ROTC. So just kind of naming all those different aspects. But from my work study, they put me in the women's department, the women's studies department.
Okay.
And I was like, why are y'all putting me in the women's studies department? I'm doing math and engineering and this and that. I don't know why you put me here, but honestly, the Women's Studies Department, as well as probably the African Diaspora Department, those are like the strongest departments at Spelman. And by being in the Women's Studies Department, I just was engulfed and ingrained in just the reproductive health system and sexual health and just advocacy in general. It was like everywhere, everything I did, whether I was doing administrative stuff, it was all ingrained in social justice. Then with that, you know, my thought was, I'm trying to get this money, but I was, so I was like, I don't know if I want to do a psychology major, because even though I started off this way, that wasn't really where I ended up or landed. Right. So I ended up going into psychology, and I was going to go into law or medicine, because those were the two things I still knew made a lot of money, since I didn't really want to continue with the engineering path.
Right.
And I decided to take a year off, and I did something called AmeriCorps Vista, which is kind of like domestic Peace Corps.
Okay.
And when I was doing that, everyone was just like, based on what your desires are, you should really consider becoming a social worker. And I was like, social work, especially where I come from, nobody wants to be a social worker.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think so. And I was like, social workers don't get paid nothing. That's not my interest. But in California, majority of people who were executive directors had an MSW, and some had a master's in public administration. So I ended up going to grad school, and I got a dual degree in public administration and social work. So I could no jobs really. So I ended up doing medical social work for a while.
Okay.
And I just saw a lot of people suffering, a lot of politics behind that suffering. And I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. And at least with my MSW, I knew I could do clinical social work and or have my private practice in mental health. And someone told me, they're just like, Renee, you've always been good at talking about sex. You should sell some sex toys. And I was like, sell sex toys? I don't know about that. Because again, as a Black woman and having anything associated with sex, it kind of puts you in a different category in your positionality and the respectability politics.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that to happen. But then I just kind of looked deeper into it, and I looked into Michigan's program, and they had a sex therapy and education program. I was like, well, if I'm going to sell some sex toys, I want to at least be skilled, and I still want to have something that gives me some credibility behind my name.
Right. Okay.
So then I ended up getting my LC. I became independently licensed as a social worker, and I did the Michigan program, and I was selling sex toys. Sex toys actually paid for my program.
Wow.
Or helped pay for my certifications. So I'm different than a sex coach, because, or sexologist. And I mean, I can consider myself a sexologist and all these different things, but I'm actually a licensed professional therapist. And then on top of that, I've done additional trainings for over 2 years of sex therapy and getting credentialed and nationally credentialed and certified.
Right.
So
you sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so I don't necessarily do touching. I don't necessarily talk about the semantics unless it's really desired in sex. I really deal with the emotional and relational aspects of sex. And also when I was doing the parties, I noticed that the Black community specifically, because I did Bedroom Candy, so that was mostly African-American focused. We just don't have any clear conversations around sex unless it's joking and around humor or it's performative. So really talking about sex from more of a healing space, from more of a, what happens when things change in life or when you're in the mood and your partner's not, and really dealing from it from a real space. I wasn't seeing that, and that's kind of why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And how I've stayed.
You had mentioned that you were doing medicinal social work or medical social working?
Medical, yes.
What does that mean exactly?
So when medical social work can look like a lot of different things, but the way I was doing medical social work is I was working more in hospice care, long-term care. So I was working with people who were elderly and those who were disabled, helping them access services in their home or in the nursing facility, assisted living facilities.
Mm-hmm. And so when you how did you decide? Okay, so your friend suggested that you start selling sex toys. How does that work? Because like oftentimes, I find that the toys that are available out there, a lot of them don't reflect our melanin. You know, a lot of them are made for white people by white people. So when you started selling sex toys, was that something that you took into consideration, or was it even necessary to take it into consideration?
I definitely took it into consideration. And the main reason why I decided to sell the sex toys was because it was Candy Burris's line. And it was African-American woman who was the face of it.
Okay.
Otherwise, I wasn't really interested. So it was funny. My friend mentioned selling sex toys. Because I would throw different parties when I lived out in California when I was in grad school. Okay. I'd be like, hey, I all kind of need to know about Pure Romance and or whatever party. They had so many different names back then. But I was like, we all should do this. So people knew that about me who were close to me. So when she mentioned it, I was like, I don't want to actually sell it. But then when I saw Candy Burris was creating her line, I decided I would go ahead and explore it because I want to support another Black woman in her venture of opening up those doors for us to talk about sex in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found as a result of diving into this world? Like, what are some of the discoveries you made?
I mean, that's interesting because I feel like we're constantly making discoveries every day.
Right.
So, I mean, the first part is our society, I think, as a whole has really been overly focused on productivity and not giving space to rest and pleasure. And I think that needs to really change.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also need to have more conversations around having genuine, authentic, organic relationships, not just things that are virtual and Insta. I'll say it like that. And, you know, it's just, I think we just need to have just more genuine conversations.
Absolutely. Like, there's a meme that I saw recently that said social media has people fooled into thinking that they can find the perfect relationship and you know, not genuinely connecting with people and not having genuine conversations, not having hard conversations. People think that, oh, you know, when this couple that they've followed who only post the good times, that's how their life is. Even when the camera goes off, and that's absolutely not true for a lot more people than one would think. Sometimes when the camera is going off, it gets really, really dark behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I just tell people, I'm like, if we look at nature, every season has its light and shadows, yeah. You know? And that's the same thing as humans. We all have our light and we all have our shadows. And every relationship has its light and its shadows. And I think maybe in the first... in the honeymoon period, things can be perfect for everybody, right?
Right.
That's kind of helps glues us together. But when we really start getting out of that honeymoon and actually getting to know one another and getting to see what's underneath the surface, you know, there's things that we all have to do to grow,
yeah,
as human beings and spiritual beings.
Absolutely. And in your sessions, when you're working with your patients or clients, do you meet with couples? Do you meet with only individuals? Do you have group sessions? How does it work?
I do all of it. So, I mean, I think my sweet spot are couples because I feel like when you are in a relationship or when you're starting a business or when you have children, so those three things, your shadow side, your mirrors start coming up. I don't want to say your shadow, but more of your mirrors. Mm-hmm. So like anything that is underneath that you haven't healed or that you need to work on for yourself, it's going to come up when you get in a relationship. It's going to come up when you have children or when you're in a business. All those things, all those insecurities that make you feel like you are not good enough, not worthy, or other statements you might have. We all have different negative cognitions. It's just whether we address them and are real with them or not.
Yeah.
You'll see those pop up. And then I do individual work, but then I do the groups, because in group, you can work on your relational skills in real time, because most likely someone in that group is going to remind you of yourself or someone that you know, or someone that you're challenged with, and you can work on that in real time.
I'm really fascinated by the fact that you trained in with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, and mm-hmm. you believe strongly in plant medicine, because that is something that my mother believes in very strongly. And I wondered, like, how do you incorporate that into your practice?
Okay. Well, for one, most psychedelics are not necessarily legalized, so I always want to name that. Right. So a lot of people will go out of the country to or go to different states where it is more legal to get the medicine work done, and then they'll come to me to do the psychedelic assisted therapy. So it's more like you've had your experience, and then we'll kind of process through it together. Or some people will go to, you know, a different country together, like Jamaica, where psilocybin's legal, and I'll serve the medicine in those spaces, and then they'll still continue to do the psychedelic treatment with me. And then I have been trained in the MDMA, but that is not, that's still in the trial clinical space, but they're hoping that will be legalized in the next year or so.
Okay.
But it's definitely powerful. And I've experienced a lot of medicines under different church spaces. So you can practice. There's some churches that do peyote. There are churches that do ayahuasca, Wachuma, the Bufo, in different amphibian medicines.
Okay.
And then same thing, like if through the church, people will go to their church, and then afterwards they'll process through their experiences and integrate it with me as a therapist.
Okay. And so that was the psychedelics, but for the plant-based medicine, are there like some stuff that's illegal or that you're not allowed to prescribe or things like that?
Well, for me, I am not a prescriber,
okay. So
I cannot prescribe. So that's where I say my line is, they would go to someone that can, or they can go with me outside the country where I can give that medicine.
Right. And why do you believe so strongly in the power of plant-based medicine?
Well, psychedelic medicines? What I try to say is, one, there is not a one size fits all for everything. And it's hard because it's such a trending space right now, plant medicine, where everybody's trying to get access to it. Everyone, I think, they're not respecting it in some ways.
Okay.
And I think I just want to name that before I go into why I think it's an amazing space. But the way, if you do these things in the right set and setting and with the right people, you will feel like it's going to put you in a place where you can be very open and vulnerable, and it's going to drop down your defense mechanism. So some of us have higher level defense mechanisms where we overly intellectualize things. We use humor. We do a bunch of different things to keep us from actually feeling.
Right.
Or we do things that are in the lower level where it's more in the subconscious, like regress or repress, you know, and forget. And that's another different thing. But when you are under the influence of a plant medicine, such as the two that I use mostly are psilocybin, and this is not plant medicine, but a psychedelic.
Okay.
I do psilocybin and I do MDMA. And what it will do is it will drop those defense mechanisms so you can be open and vulnerable to experience whatever traumas whatever things are in your subconscious, unconscious that you need to heal, that you can't. And when I say heal, I mean feel. And so you need to feel it so that you can figure out how to look at them differently and process through it in a deeper way. And it will feel, for some people, when they do it in the right setting, because the thing is, people are out here just doing mushrooms, doing all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And Molly's been around for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, and they just go out and they are having it recreationally. And I believe in recreation, there can be healing. But if you're not in the right set or setting, it can also be harmful.
Yeah.
So, you know, so just maybe that's kind of what's happening is you'll feel like you're doing 10 years of therapy in the 6 hour or some people 8 hour trip that you're experiencing.
Right. And you have to be very intentional about it as well. You can't, you can't go into certain things willy nilly. You know, you need the proper guidance. You need the proper care in order to accompany you through that is what I'm understanding from our discussion.
I mean, you know, it's hard for me to say a heart need because I feel like people can get healing in so many different ways.
True.
Outside, in the safest optimal way. Yes, that's what I'm going to say. Safety and optimally, this is what you want.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us for the first time, we are speaking to Renee Burwell, who is a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma in the States, because I said nationally, but it's in the States. Her practice, Pandora's Awakening, offers services and educational outreach that help destigmatize mental and sexual health services. We are in Radio Land, so we do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music, keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Hello, how does it feel to be at the top of the hill? You must be always happy. Your life's always happening. Soldier left to call when everybody thinks I have it all. I stay on my own if that's alright. Leave me in the zone, turn off the lights. Soldier left to call when everybody thinks I have it all. I stay on my own if that's alright. Leave me in the zone, turn off the lights.
Turn off the lights. I know my life seems perfect to you.
Nothing, no nothing is what it seems. Turn off the lights. Soldier left to call when everybody thinks I have it all. I stay on my own if that's alright. Leave me in the zone, turn off the lights.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and tonight's guest is Renee Burwell, a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator in the States with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. Her practice, Pandora's Awakening, offers services and educational outreach that help destigmatize mental and sexual health services. She is a skilled facilitator offering trainings and workshops to healthcare and social service professionals on mental health, sexual health, and reproductive justice. She is trained with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies and believes strongly in the power of plant medicine and other forms of psychedelic medicines in healing current and generational trauma. Renee, thank you so much for being here this evening and talking with us. I think it's a really important career path that needs to be communicated with other folks, because, you know, we go through things, and I feel like in these 2024s, we're getting to a level of awareness of, like, okay, I've been through stuff and I need to work through it. I feel like more and more people are aware of that nowadays. But the generation right before, and maybe I can speak to my generation necessarily, we didn't necessarily grow up with that thing. You know, I'm an 80s baby, and there was no, oh, I'm aware of my mental health, and there was none of that going on into my 20s. It's really in my 30s, coming closer to my 40s, that I was like, okay, there's mental health issues, and I need to deal with this unchecked anger that I have, and I need to figure out why I'm choosing these relationships that really don't work for me. So it's something that I feel like the world is kind of awakening and making those changes, and I want to give a platform to that. So again, gratitude for coming on and talking with us this evening.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's a powerful thing you've just said about mental health and different perceptions of what it is. Because I think about, like, what was my frame of what mental health looked like growing up. And I always thought going to therapy or having a therapist was something that people who were very wealthy and white did. I didn't even think of it from the perspective, if you get therapy, you're crazy. It was just like, if you get therapy, you probably are from a very privileged space.
Right.
And then, like, if you have mental health issues or relational issues, you pray about it. Like, that was really always the script. And it's so funny, like, now, you know, years later, you kind of made a little giggle face, but that was like, there was no such thing as getting medications. If you had an uncle, it's usually like a uncle or somebody off, you know, like, we'll just be like, that person's a little off, and we just kind of leave them alone, or they're in jail, or, you know, I mean, because that's really what happens to people of color who suffer from severely persistently mental health issues, is we tend to just be criminalized, you know, and even when we suffer from depression, it ends up being usually a form of aggression where we may not be committing suicide, but we're committing suicide in some ways through the gang activities, through the criminal justice systems, or what are criminal activities, because we don't have other choices as well as resources.
Yeah.
Or through self-medicating, you know, through substance use. So it's very complicated when you think about the history of what mental health looks like and how it's evolved. And now you don't even see as many Black people in churches the same way you did back in the 90s, even, or 80s, 90s, 2000s, early 2000s. I feel like once the mega churches started to get more exposed and also the Catholic churches and all the other churches, more so, even though I feel like everybody knew that these churches were doing foul things sexually and exploiting people financially.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like in the 2000s, early 2000s, that stuff started to change. So people started to need other outlets. But I really don't feel like in our community, the Black community, it wasn't until probably COVID that we started to really, really look at mental health services and getting therapy on a really substantial level. I think it was still a place for those who were privileged until COVID.
Okay, that's interesting. Like getting the U.S. perspective versus the Canadian perspective, because I do feel like from around 2010 into the 15s, there was a shift in. But then again, maybe it's just the people that I surround myself with.
That could be it, you know, right?
Like a lot of my friends were, we would talk to each other about our mental health issues, and I started figuring out, oh, I have a friend over here who's becoming a therapist, and another friend over there who's turning into a therapist, and oh, I found out there's a Black therapist in Montreal, and I just so happened to know her from when I had arrived back in Montreal. But it's interesting that your perspective is that COVID really shook up the Black community and made the community aware that, okay, we need something other than church and prayer to help us to get through this.
Or just ignoring, you know, I think that's kind of what people start to do, is just ignore and put it underneath the blanket. I know, like, I'll say for me, my first exposure to mental health services was when I was at Spelman. They offered free mental health services to students, and it was very much highlighted and promoted. Mm-hmm. But again, Spelman is a historically Black women's college.
Right.
That is always on like the forefront of something different. So yes, everybody went to therapy on campus. But then once I went to California, or even in the communities that I served, I didn't see anyone getting mental health services like that who weren't forced into it, mandated into it of some form or fashion.
Right.
And even when I went to California, I didn't see it happen. It still wasn't a very thing people were really, really talking about. Even though I was in a social work program, I was an advisor for marriage and family therapists. Maybe we would have one or two students in the marriage and family therapy program that would come through.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still very, very white. And even Psychology Today, which I believe is not just in the States, it's always been very, very white until George Floyd happened. And then that's when they started to really notice. And some of it's not necessarily that Black people didn't want it. I don't think we were invited into the systems. So that's the difference too.
Yeah. Yeah. In your bio, you talk about working with folks for generational trauma. We oftentimes, a lot of us hear the term generational trauma, and we think we know what it is. But one thing that I've discovered is we tend to interpret what we think words mean. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to ask you, what is generational trauma?
Well, that's a very deep question. I mean, there's multiple ways of looking at it, right? Mm-hmm. So epigenetics is like the genetic DNA that's passed on from generation to generation. When we look at the epigenetics, like in general, what our grandmother has a certain amount of eggs. And so then those eggs still have your mother who has the certain amount of eggs. So it's like you already have that DNA from your grandmother and your mother in you, period. So if your grandmother was abused or had so many different things happen to her body, that DNA is inside of you. That the body keeps that score. So when we have just mental health issues in general, sometimes it can just be part of our DNA. So noticing that piece. But then we also have just the generational trauma of, I mean, we can, if we go macro, of slavery or of racism, of all these different social systems that have culturally created these systems that we have learned to just consistently abuse people, or excuse me, I don't want to say it, I'll say abuse, but let me just say violate boundaries, because right. most of us don't even understand what boundaries are and that we're violating some them sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. The whole system of legalizing certain ages or making certain ages an age of consent, that's new, you know, okay. relationships, women having power in a relationship, that's fairly new, you know, children having voices, that's fairly new. And even when it comes to like when we say we can't cry or we can't do different things like that, that's forms of survival that aren't necessarily just because of the epigenetics. They're socially ingrained things that we've learned in order to survive. Like, we have to keep moving despite our pain. We have to push down our feelings, because if we show feelings, that is not safe for us to keep going in a white supremacist environment. Mm-hmm. Or white toxic is the name that I'm hearing people use now that I really like, but it's true. And it's we're all affected by it.
Say the new term again. What is it? White toxicity? White
toxicity. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Is that a better term, you find?
I mean, because if you think about the term white supremacy, it makes it sound like one race is more superior.
Right.
But really, it is the culture of white toxicity that is truly what we're talking about, because it's the toxic traits of the white culture that are impacting people, not the supremacy.
Okay.
So if you think about like the traits of white culture that are toxic, it's not just toxic to people of color, it's toxic to white people too. Perfectionism is a toxic trait.
Right.
Productivity over pleasure, that's a toxic trait. Quantity over quality, those are toxic traits. Professionalism, or having certain standards that don't have anything to do with actually the work, those are toxic traits. I mean, we can go on and on, or believing that there is a hierarchy. Though that's part of the toxicity.
Okay. It's interesting, because I always thought about it, white supremacy, as like an idea that they are, like the thought that they are and behave in a superior way doesn't mean that they actually are. But I also understand what you mean from your explanation of what white toxicity is, because a lot of the times they're not superior at all, and it's just they just so happen to have the privilege of power because of their ancestors' colonial impact on the land, on the environment, on politics now, which allows them to feel superior, quote unquote, but you ain't superior.
And it's not just them feeling superior. It's us feeling inferior too, yes. You know, which is toxic.
Yes. It's just as bad. Like when, you know, all of the issues that we have within our community, from bleaching skin, perming hair, trying to changing the color of our eyes, whether it's using contact lenses and other things, and not just loving ourselves, which is a big part of why I get so surprised when I see people who are confessing and saying, oh, I don't, it took me a long time to love myself. And I'm like, but you're a beautiful human being. And I have to like take myself out of myself and be like, yes, but your experience is not the same as everybody else's experience. And you don't know what that person lived through. You don't know who spoke to that person. You don't know who cut that person with their words, you know, with their actions. I have to always check myself. So I'll see someone and I'll be like, oh, but why? And I'm just like, because they had a different life experience than you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta just accept that.
And you, they can, it's complicated because regardless of people's experiences, it's still, that's why I use a toxicity. It's so toxic. It's like when you drop a drop of poison in water, mm-hmm. Everything's poisoned, yeah. You know? So you look at the media and you know, who are the primary visions of beauty? You know, it's usually, the texture is usually straight or flowy, even if it's or a person of color, it's not a textured hair.
Yeah.
The complexions that can be, I mean, now we're, even if it's a darker complected person, the texture is something, texture is funny. One of my friends said, they're like, texture is where you know where someone's from. You know,
yeah.
Your complexion, you could be all kinds of shades and be Latin, you know, or have some kind of Euro flair, right. You know, but that texture is kind of what has always been something that has
it gets undeniable.
It's what is a standard of beauty for that toxicity space. But you know, I mean, just like the fact that we're speaking English and not any of our native languages, you know, says something.
Yeah.
You know, even in the schools, how many of us can learn a native African language? You know, maybe you might get, I know there were some spaces where you can get Swahili, mm-hmm. But that's like the closest you can get. I mean, it's interesting. I'm surprised they don't teach Hebrew even, and that's closer to to the continent than some of the other languages we have. But just saying, those are like, these are small things that are real, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't have any problem, people. If you want to process your hair, if you want to have blue eyes, you know, if you want your, that's your choice. But the thing is, like, I was getting processed. My hair was being processed before 5, probably 3. And when I decided to eventually go natural, again, going to Spelman, I was in a different space. When I went back home, everybody was like, what did you do? You know, you were beautiful before. Now you're not. I mean, they would say that straight to my face. And I was like, and these were grown, my mother's friends, my friend's parents would say this. And my friends, they would kind of be like, I think I don't like it, but it's whatever you want to do. They were more compassionate with it.
Right.
But, you know, it was the elders who were really holding that, what is beautiful and what's not, based on a standard of beauty that is very Eurocentric.
Yeah. 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 Ladies and gentlemen, if you are tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Renee Burrell, a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator in the States with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. And we were just talking about generational trauma and how that affects people, and whoo, our community, we got a lot of it. This is Radio Land, so we do got to pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Long little chief. For a little old thing, little boys bang bang. Long little chief. Niggas fighting over rain, niggas won't beat the game. But
long little chief. Yeah, watch pretty mama while I slay my cane. Long little chief. Cockroaches in the ratchet. Hand-me-downs with the patches. Mama put a little money in the mattress. Taught me how to make a silver spoon out of plastic. You can either sink, swim, or be the captain. Get the last word, I'ma get the last laughing. Now they say you're dinner while you're dressing so classy. I don't want my best dressed day in a casket. You can either leave, follow, or get out the way. Make a fucking move, it will make my fucking day. Got a 100-year plan, you just think about the day. Always been about time, more than been about pay. Y'all up with me, Usain couldn't run with me. Chief come to find you, you don't come for me. At best, you could run a little company. Nigga, at worst, I could run the whole country. That's right, pimp game like a brothel. That's why I don't judge a nigga's hustle. I Airbnb the crib like a hostel. Summer rate cheaper, could the streets get hostile? Shot the boy, this far from a hobby boy. So no, I won't record for your homie boy. I turn the party out like a naughty toy. Then I go and hide in plain sight like a lobby boy. Yes, sir, that your dinner on the banner. Riding for my niggas, getting locked up in a slammer. Elder saying everything's a nail to a hammer.
Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Renee Burwell, nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. She has trained with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies and believes strongly in the power of plant medicine and other forms of psychedelic medicines in healing current and generational trauma. Renee holds a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Spelman College, a Master of Social Work and a Master of Public Administration from the University of Southern California, a postgraduate certificate in sex therapy and education from the University of Michigan, and is AASECT certified as a sex therapist, supervisor, and educator. Renee, once again, gratitude, gratitude, gratitude for being here with us this evening and shedding some light on deeper issues that we don't always talk about. When we were talking earlier about generational trauma, you had mentioned, like, look at social media, look at how we're influenced, look at how, the images that we're shown. And there's one thing that I've been noticing, and it's been like picking at me. In a lot of TV shows and movies nowadays, there's always a biracial relationship. It's always like a black man, and it's usually a black man and a white woman, a black man and an Asian woman, a black man and a Latin woman. Usually, on occasion, it's a black woman and a white man or a black woman and, you know. But I'm like, why is this? What? This don't feel right. Like, where's that black on black love? Like, I grew up in the 90s with, you know, Spike Lee and John Singleton and all of those blacks. So I was used to seeing and watching Boomerang and watching those movies. So I was used to seeing some black love. Like, this wasn't new to me when we started having more movies in the 2020s. But I was like, it feels very strategic, even in our ads, even in the commercials. It's always this biracial thing going on. Like Dungeons and Dragons, a movie just came out recently, and it's like the kid is biracial and even the mother was biracial. And I'm just like, Ava DuVernay's movie that came out a few years ago, I think it's A Wrinkle in Time. The same thing. The child was biracial. I'm like, Ava DuVernay, but you black though. You what's going on? So I'm kind of wondering, do you have a kind of take of the impact of this? Or is it just a reflection that, okay, you know, we live in a post-racial society and we do have interracial relationships, so we should be reflecting those as well?
So this has nothing to, I mean, it definitely has something to do with my work, I'm sure. But I'm just going to say I'm not speaking from a therapist perspective. No.
It's because you kind of brought it up, so I was okay. Curious about your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, so I just want to name that, like, okay, these are my opinions.
And as a human being.
Yes. I do notice that, I mean, in some ways you could say media influences humans, but then also humans influence media. It's complicated, right? Like, I mean, as a black woman, it's very painful in some ways to feel that the society is trying to erase you, you know? And I feel like society has always tried to erase us. And I think it's easiest to do that. I mean, society's trying to embrace black people in general.
Yeah.
I want to say, I think when you attack the women or erase the women, at some point it'll make it easier to erase the men too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think about the 90s, you know, even when you said Spike Lee, that was like the first movie was Jungle Fever. Mm. And, you know, they had a whole song called I Have Jungle Fever, You Got Jungle Fever. Yeah. And it's funny, I was also watching I watched Till like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
About the Emmett Till story and his mother. And it's funny, once I start watching certain things, and like I know that story very well, but I didn't go deep down the rabbit hole. But his father, his biological father, actually was, I don't know if you know this, but he was hung for raping and killing a white Italian woman in overseas when he was in the military.
Okay.
So it was, and some people were saying that may have, it like generational again, like generations till his father, both were killed by some, whether it was accurate or not, but some kind of accusation around flirting with the forbidden fruit.
Wow.
And I'm just, and y'all can Google this. This is not something that I'm just making up.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
even if it's not, it's just kind of, there's something, I think in human nature, tantalizing and appealing about having something that people tell you can't have. And the same thing for other women. So white, Asian, we have to keep in mind, like, anti-blackness is very real across the globe.
Yeah.
You know, in the Latin community, in our Mexican community, I'll speak for specifically, I would have Mexican friends tell me about how they grew up and they were told, I forgot what they called black men, but they're like, don't date those men, you know, black men, and it was specific. So it's like, so when all these women are being told, don't touch black men, and then all the black men know that if they touch these other women, it's almost like a magnet attracting to each other. I'm just speaking kind of what's coming to my mind right now.
Yeah.
But it's like a magnet attracting to each other. Like, oh, I can't touch you. All these people behind me have been killed or hurt. So I'm going to definitely try to kind of do that. And then on both sides. And then at the same time, like when we look at the white toxicity culture, white toxicity culture says that Black women are not attractive and that they are masculine and that they have attitudes and that they are not compassionate and they are not suitable partners for anyone. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Black men that are dismissing Black women. It's everybody that's dismissing Black women, which makes it very hard. I mean, if I go into like the praising self space,
right?
You know, someone says that Black women are first frequency. You know, we are the originators. You
right.
know,
yes.
From,
yes.
In which we, you know, science has shown that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like once you get the DNA of a Black person, we usually will overcome whatever race that we're with. It, not overcome, but you know what I'm saying. We melanate race. And I think there's some fear to that, but then at the same time, you know, I'll just say from my plant medicine journeys, everything happens for, at some point evolve and happen for whatever reason is supposed to happen. Even as we look at the sun and global warming, mm-hmm. melanated skin is going to be the healthier skin. You know, I wish... Also, one thing that I would like to name is like, there's no such thing as utopia in this world.
Right.
You know, and I think, especially in my youth, and that's what I admire the youth for, is that we believe in utopia. And then as you get older, you realize you can't create that. Like, no. That's not what this world is meant to be. There are certain factors, even if we keep pushing for it, it will always have some regression and some backwardsness to it.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that some of all of this is just kind of just part of human nature, and we'll see how it all evolves within time. I wish there wasn't so much racism towards Black women in our society. And that's my overall thought on it.
Yeah. And I feel like it we can still tie it back, because have you seen the impact of like this societal global view on Black people, Black women, Black men? Has it come up in your therapy sessions with your Black clients?
I mean, of course, you know, of course. And it's complicated, because at the end of the day, you know, we don't live in a utopia, for one, but we all should believe we have value, and we should all believe that we are worthy. And unfortunately, when society keeps telling you over and over again that you are not worthy and that you don't have value, or your value is in how much money you make, or how beautiful you look, or how much money you can spend, you know, that goes back to that toxicity stuff, mm-hmm. you know, and all I can do as a therapist, or my work as a therapist, is one, to work on whatever trauma barriers or like disconnections in alignment with your personal ecosystem. Like, that's what I do. I work on helping to align the personal, individual, emotional, relational ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that outside stuff, there's only so much we can do about that, except for just try to make ourselves happy and hope that as we make ourselves happy, we'll attract better people into our systems and invite better material, better images, you know, because it's hard, because like I was looking at Amazon, you know, Prime, and it was constantly the Smiths with Childish Gambino, and I don't know the Asian girl's name.
Right, and, yes.
You know, and it's just kind of like, it makes me, and I think, and I have to name this, like, I am I am an elder. You know, I'm in my 40s now.
Right.
So the way I view some of this stuff is going to look differently than the way other people view it,
yeah.
You know, because of my upbringing. But it makes me twinge a little bit, you know, because it's just kind of like, I wish he could be with a Black woman, you know, I wish he could. And we already know he's not with a Black woman in real life,
no.
You know? So it's just kind of like, there's some sorrow to that.
Yeah.
And I wish Black women in general were highlighted more than we are. And I wish it wasn't just the same people over and over again too,
yeah.
You know? But all we can do is try to take care of our own internal ecosystems. At least first, and then we can try to change the outside. Because at first I was trying to change every social problem there was as a social worker,
mm-hmm.
or as a human, you know, and it was tiresome and I was burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just more like with the plant medicine journeys and just with my own maturity, I'm trying to just help people to do the same thing and taking care of themselves first and honoring what brings them peace, because they will see that reverberate in other spaces.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up that, you know, when you were seeing all of this and you wanted to make a change and you noticed that you were perhaps on the verge of a burnout. I wanted to ask you, as you are taking care of everybody, who's taking care of Renee Burrell?
I mean, I take care of myself.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, I take care of myself. I definitely, as I'm taking care of myself, I've learned to attract or disconnect from people who don't take care of me. You know, in the past, I would just be accepting to everybody and I didn't know what was good and bad,
mm-hmm.
and or boundary breaking, because again, in media, we kind of glamorize poor boundaries.
Yes.
You know, we don't really support people saying no. We want people to be nice and to be friendly and to be giving. And the more I've learned to just give to myself as well, I'm around family members, I'm around friends, as long as we all are going to have highs and lows, but as long as it's reciprocal, I'm in it. And that's how I take care of me. I mean, and it's funny because someone was saying yesterday, what are exact self-care habits? So my self-care habits, I drink water. I'm showing you him my water right now. I drink water,
mm-hmm.
in the morning. I try to take vitamins. I try to do my meditation. I try to connect with good people, you know, or maintain relationships that I feel are healthy to me. I stay outside as much as I can, you know, get good sunlight. I'm not a big glamour person, but for my personal sanity, I'd like to get my nails done,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
If my eyebrows done. If my eyebrows are not done, you probably know I am not taking care of myself right now, you know, but those are like small things that I do every day, or not every day, but on a some
regular
of it every
basis.
Day,
yeah.
Some on a consistent basis,
mm-hmm.
that I take care. And also I do yoga. I exercise, not just yoga, but I exercise almost daily.
Regular.
To maintain my mental health.
How important is blending physical exercise and being aware of your physical health to your mental health?
I mean, it's completely integrated. Like, you cannot neglect one over the other. They consistently impact each other. I mean, and that's not just in your mental health, but even in your cognitive health. So if you aren't exercising on a regular basis, especially in your cardio, I mean, that's where plaque builds up into the brain. You can get Alzheimer's and all kinds of other things. So you want to make sure you're doing some kind of exercise. You're treating your body well. In order for your mental health. And if you have a chronic illness, that automatically is going to be what we call comorbid or coexisting with mental health. Like, it's just one and they're so linked. So it's like whenever I say you're in a low space, you almost have to double up on your exercise, right. You know? And it has to be from the right mindset, because it's not like, oh, I'm doubling up on my exercise because I want to look good. It needs to be, I'm doubling up on my exercise because I want to feel good and I want my body to know I'm taking care of it. And I think that's the problem with this gym culture, is that it has its own toxicity because it's all about vanity. But if we actually talked about it for more like feel good, appreciating gratitude, it would be very different on our bodies.
Mm, mm. I like that you say emphasize that you feel good rather than you look good, because if you feel good, you're going to look good.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
and yeah, that's whatever the size, mm-hmm, you know, if you feel good, you look good, period.
Yeah. 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 Cause nobody can see me, but I've been a little bit, I say to people, I look like a piece of melted butter. I let myself go a bit, but I went to the barber on Friday and I sat down in my barber's chair. My barber cut me up and made me look nice and good. And I was like, yeah, I feel good. I feel really good. And then somebody, mm-hmm, said, I did a show on Sunday evening, and my feature, a good friend of mine, he was like, Kim, I love your fade. And I was like, yeah, I'm trying to look like you when I grow up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, just something as simple as getting your hair cut just changed my whole weekend. And I was just feeling so much better about myself. And yeah, you feel good, so you look good. That, mm-hmm, I think they go hand in hand. You're not supposed to look good to feel good. It don't work, mm-hmm, the same way. But this is Radio Land, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us for the first time, we're speaking to Renee Burwell, nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma based in the U.S. Her practice, Pandora's Awakening, offers services and educational outreach that help to destigmatize mental and sexual health services. She's a skilled facilitator, offering trainings and workshops to healthcare and social service professionals on mental health, sexual health, and reproductive justice. This is Radio Land, so we do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music, keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Sufi woman, bring me roomy till I fall asleep up on your bosom. You're a lion, but you walk around so unassuming. You go shine your eyes, you go put it on me. Put the liquor spell on me. What thing you do to me? You no go walk on me. You go see. You go night, night, night. You go shake it. You go see that goddess in La Bruja, eh, La Bruja. Debe die, she could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. She debe die, she could die, my room, La Bruja, La Bruja. She debe die, she dies, I'll be your leader, your leader.
We're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, And I'm here with Renee Burwell, a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. Her practice, Pandora's Awakening, offers services and educational outreach that help destigmatize mental and sexual health services. She is a skilled facilitator offering training and workshops to healthcare and social service professionals on mental health, sexual health, and reproductive justice. She has trained with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies and believes strongly in the power of plant medicine and other forms of psychedelic medicines in healing current and generational trauma. She holds a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Spelman College, a Master of Social Work and Public Administration from the University of Southern California, a postgraduate certificate in Sex Therapy and Education from the University of Michigan, and is AASECT certified as a sex therapist, supervisor, and educator. Renee, I'm so grateful that that you decided to come out and talk with us this evening. I've felt really educated, and as I started saying to some people, I feel really full, like I had a full meal, because I love conversation. I love talking to people, and I love learning about people. And you've given me a lot to think about and to learn as well.
Well, thank you.
So we're wrapping up. We're coming to the end of the show. But I'd like to ask what is something that people should think about when it comes to their mental health? What are some things that they need to perhaps take into account when it comes to mental health?
I would say the first thing I want people to kind of think about is, are you taking care of you first? Like, I don't want people to be selfish, but I need people to be self-centered. Because no matter what, and there's a difference. So selfish means my needs trump everybody's and I'm not thinking about anyone else. Self-centered means everybody's needs matter, but for me, I have to look at mine first.
Okay.
So I just want to make that, that's how I define it. Now, somebody can look at Webster and it may say something different, but that's how I'm going to define it today. So
okay.
When I say self-centered, if I know that I have a family or if I have a community, I'm going to make sure, again, am I fed? Am I exercising well? Is what I need taken care of so I can take care of everybody else? Mm. Some people are always like, I want to make sure my kids are taken care of first. I'm going to make sure this is taken care of first. But the thing is, the more you do that, the more you're chipping away at yourself. And then at some point, it all falls apart.
Yeah.
Because your foundation is not strong.
Yeah.
So ideally, you need to make sure you are actually centering yourself first.
Yeah.
For you to take care of everybody else, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Not the other way around. Because what happens is people are like, oh, I'm a woman. I'm supposed to take care of my family first. I'm supposed to do this first. I'm like, well, if that were the case, you wouldn't need to be in here because you are not able to work because you're shaking so much due to your anxiety and your instability, or you're having all these health issues. You know, we wonder why people have all this heart disease, diabetes, strokes, stomach, GI issues, and that's your emotions not being processed properly.
Yeah.
You know, as well as, I mean, it's a combination, but really it's because most people are not processing the trauma in their bodies. So if you center yourself first, you will notice everything else around you start to change. Yeah. And you can do more to help other people and to help your community. So that's the first thing. Know what your self-care habits are. You know, everybody has different needs. You know, for me, I really enjoy, I do Orange Theory, which is like circuit training. I love doing circuit training. I like to do something, a lot of different variations of exercise. So I do belly dance. I can't do pole dancing. Pole dancing does not suit me, but everybody else, that's my sister's jam. You know, So I love doing yoga, but I don't like doing power yoga. I like doing yin yoga. So again, like, know what your body likes. Try to stay away from the outside of the grocery store. Not the outside, the inside of the grocery store. You want to stay closer to the outside.
Oh, yeah.
To the fresh foods.
Yeah.
You know, stay away from the processed stuff. Actually, try not to even eat out that much, because that usually has a lot of butter and salt and stuff in it. But use that as a treat. You know, focus on your pleasure, even when it comes to sex. You know, since that's kind of my area, I think part of what makes sex challenging is, one, most people don't center themselves, or some people are overly selfish, you know. So we need to start centering our pleasure. We need to stop overly working on idle hands are the devil's workshop, and actually resting. But those are some things to kind of keep in mind for your mental health. Off top, there's probably good music, good people, good company, knowing how to say no. Those are all additional pieces to making sure you stay vibrant.
Yes, absolutely. Referring back to the show that I was hosting on Sunday, so there's a question and answer period, and the artist said at some point he referenced, you know, are you feeding yourself as if you love yourself? I was like, that just blew my brains right through my ears. I was like, sir, stop calling me out, sir. Stop calling me out.
And that's a deep question, because some people think that loving yourself, they don't think through, like, if you're feeding yourself junk, is that really loving yourself, you know? But people say, oh, well, it makes me feel good in the moment, but it's about the long-term longevity.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Renee Burwell, we are at the end of the show. Thank you so, so very much for having come in this evening and talked to us. How can people get in touch with you? How can people find out more information about Pandora's Awakening, your social media? Give us all the things.
Okay. Well, my website is pandorasawakening.com, or if you needed to get in contact with me completely individually, you can use my name, reneeburwell.com. I'm also on social media at Holistic Sex Therapist or at Pandora's_Awakening.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you once again. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us for the first time, you can listen back to the entire archive at 8:31 p.m. on ckut.ca. I was speaking with Renee Burwell, a nationally acclaimed psychotherapist and educator with specializations in sex therapy and trauma. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and we're going to be speaking to Sasha Heyer, an author who has created a book called Island Vibes, which is about knitting. So tune in next week, Tuesday. We're going to be having a great conversation. And the following Tuesday, we're going to be back at West Haven for our Teen Talk Live with Ziplocks from Ill Groove Gardens and Phenomenal and Nefertari as our teen hosts. Until then, you know what it is. We talk about the Black community with the Black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and of course internationally. Listen to us every Tuesday evening, 7 to 8:30. You've been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Big stars, big cash, my way, but still a family. And I want minutes. Still I can't believe, but I can't blame myself for this shit. A new man just was born for this shit. Of course I fucked up. Who never fuck up? Hands in the air. No hands. Still I can't believe. You know what I mean? I was young, what you expect from me? It is what it is. But I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? Oh, I keep going, no. More like a rolling stone, cause I have no stopping time. Can nobody stop a man? No, I'm gonna run my race. I'm gonna keep my pace, cause I really have no one to play. When I fall again, I can't stand this pain. I can't watch me fail.
So anytime you pray, remember my name, remember you know a traveler. The name is Greg Wood, the hustler. He's been far away, chasing Kuala La. I'll be back again, promise coming. I swear on my life, I can't wait to be back. I know you miss me, I know. Remember you know a traveler. The name is Greg Wood, the hustler. He's been far away, chasing Kuala La. I'll be back again, promise coming. I swear.
Put the loyal friends, I love them too. I look nice, but I'm not so, so good. I got something I just wanna prove. Can you get yourself inside my room? Let me take you up.
Take you up.
Let me take you down.
Lay you down.
Let me show you up.
Show you up.
Let me turn you on.
Turn you up.
Let me show you some good lo 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 lo. Lo 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 lo. Let me show you good lo 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 lo.
Spread the word. CKUT is looking for someone to join our team as the chair of the board of directors. Our board of directors reads the fine print, approves the annual budget, engages in community outreach, and keeps CKUT's eye on the bigger picture. The board meets for 2 hours every month, and the chair circulates agendas, keeps meetings organized, and acts as a liaison between the outside world and the board. If you're passionate about the station, this is an opportunity to help lead CKUT into a new era of community media. For more information, please send a message to admin@ckut.ca.
Les Productions Nuit d'Afrique presents Malian superstar Oumu Sangaré, who has influenced the likes of Beyoncé and Alicia Keys. Oumu Sangaré will perform an exclusive concert at M. Tillus on April 21st, 2024. Tickets and info at festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Les changements des lois fédérales et provinciales rendent difficile la préparation de vos rapports d'impôts. La solution, Bureau Comptable Cola. Des professionnels chevronnés travaillent avec rigueur pour vous sauver de l'argent ou vous aider à recevoir le maximum de votre rapport d'impôt à un prix compétitif.
Vous êtes dans la grande région de Montréal et ses environs.
Confiez vos rapports d'impôt personnels et d'entreprise au bureau comptable Cola.
Appelez dès maintenant le 514-374-0137. Chez Bureau Comptable Cola, votre comptable travaille pour vous.
Ascoltați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90,3 FM CKUT.
Sentimentele lui nu mai sunt la fel ca sentimentele ei.